All right, I'm here with Sarah Houston. Her new album is called In Time. It came out in December. So right out the gate, that's sort of my first question is, it's the album is sort of this feel of like an exercise in sort of memory and place and time.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wonder when somebody executes a project with sort of a, like a almost physical, not physical, but like a theme, like a true theme. How did you settle on that?
Yeah, like it took a long time. At first I really, yeah, it was a long process kind of getting to where, to the theme, the like the main theme of the album. It's like, I knew I wanted it to be a concept album of some sorts, but when I first had the idea, like to do the album, I didn't quite have all the songs written, obviously. And so the more I wrote and the more the music kind of came out through the creative process, I was able to kind of, I had like kind of an aha moment at the end where I was like, oh yeah, this is what this album's going to be about. But it took a while to get there. It was a really long process for me. It was like 2 years of trying to figure out, okay, like it could go this way or it could go that way. Or I had, at one point I had like two different titles like in my mind, and then I ended up scrapping both of them. And yeah, but it was right. It was really close to when I actually started the recording process. Like I didn't really know where it was going until like right before I started recording. And then I was like, oh yeah, I'm right about to go into the studio and now I know what I want to do with this album. So it just took a while. Yeah.
How do you compose them? Because it sounds it has a sense of spontaneity, but it is
yeah.
very, very controlled at the same time.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I usually begin at the piano. I compose most of my music at the piano, and that's what I did with this album too. And then actually about halfway through composing the music for this album, I was able to start working with a digital audio interface, which has been amazing, or digital audio workspace. And that really helped me, like, it just like opened up a whole new world of things that I could do with my music, just using like the library and Logic and being able to work with like strings and other instruments, which is something I'd never really done before. And so that was super awesome and helpful for the writing process for this album.
And you could still write with those instruments, like on a piano.
Yeah. Yeah. I just use my,
it's totally different at the same time. Right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the beauty of digital audio workspaces, I think, is
totally
unlimited layers, basically.
Unlimited layers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love it.
I've always had a strong interest in that is like, just what you, let's say you just wrote a song on the piano and you only have that melody. You can't come up with anything else, but then you put it into like a MIDI and you could just keep adding with just that melody.
Exactly. Ending. Yeah. Yeah. So, and that was, yeah. And I knew like from the beginning that I really wanted to have, like, I wanted it to be more than just a solo piano album. And I did that, like my first album was solo piano, but this time I thought like, I want to do something different. Like I know that I can write for other instruments and I really want to try it with this album. And so things just came together and I was able to get my digital audio workspace going. And yeah, it the timing was perfect.
Great.
Yeah. So yeah.
It's a beautiful record truly. And it's Thank got you. An emotional arc. Especially because of all the different instruments. Like when I listened to it for the first time, I was like, oh, okay, this isn't just a solo piano album. Like, but it, you know, it just builds emotionally and kind of has more depth. Cause I was like, it could just be very moody and sad, but it's got moments of happiness and moments of true melancholy.
Yeah. It's all in there.
Yeah.
yeah.
So tell me, you've also done a bit of, or quite a bit of scoring work. Is that the right word? Scoring?
So film scoring, yeah.
Yeah. How does one approach that? I've only talked to one other person that's done film score work before and having to work with images.
Yeah. Most of this film scoring work I've done has been done collaboratively. Like I haven't actually yet worked on a project where I've done the whole thing on my own, composing. But so it's, but yeah, scoring to film, it's different for sure. Like, it's different than just composing your own music and you're like just coming up with your own compositions from your imagination. To describe, I feel like the process is so different for everybody. I've only had my own experience. I think it's sometimes, like, I worked on a couple films where it's just taken forever to finally feel like I've got the idea. Like, I've connected the music with the picture. And then there's other films where it's so easy. It just comes. Yeah. So I don't know. That's a really hard question. I find it just depends on the film that you're working on. Summer.
Because I do feel like what's so interesting about it is you're adherent to like a grid, but it's not formal. Like it reminds me of like you know, the scores that are like they're not really like real scores,
Yeah.
and different kinds of scores. But like the it's like a almost performance already, John Cage sort of thing, where it's
Yeah.
just like play a stone in a summer park or whatever.
Right,
I feel
right.
like that's the same way you would approach scoring. In
Yeah.
that you're adhering to the rhythm of the images rather than
Yeah.
a click track.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. A lot of it, yeah. I kind of I'm really
And
into
so,
like
okay.
the experimental kind of style, which goes well with some of the films I've composed music for.
What were the films that you've composed for again? Can you remind
Mostly
me?
short films. So I've done the most recent one that I worked on is called Rosebud, Alberta. It's a short documentary. It was released by Eric Pauls and Michael Janke back, I think, the fall of 2019-ish, just before the pandemic. So, and it premiered at the Edmonton International Film Festival. So, yeah.
So I was curious also about the field recordings on the new
Oh,
record,
yeah.
and how you went about that. I'm big into
Oh,
that
really?
personally, at least. I've been trying to get one field recording a day. Is what drew me to your album was it was a, like when I saw it in the CFUV library, and I was like, oh, okay, that's in time because I've been doing something similar.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
What style of music do you write?
I make like just ambient electronic music
Oh,
these days, at least.
cool.
Yeah,
That's
big into
awesome.
that.
Cool. Yeah, like that actually wasn't my idea to use the found sounds. That was my so my recording engineer and my co-producer, Paul, he came up with that idea when we first were talking about the album, because I wanted to theme the album, like I wanted the theme to surround kind of like my experience with parenting within those two, my kids talking or playing or just like different things that we do in like just normal things that are happening in the day, just kind of capturing those moments. And so I did that and it actually worked out quite well, I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so
Yeah.
too. I find too the found sounds field recordings all like used tastefully really like just gives this extra little weight, especially to like studio
Yeah.
music,
Yeah, for sure.
which can often sound over polished and
Yeah.
such. And it's that easy. You just add a little bit of real life to it,
Exactly.
and suddenly it's injected with
Yeah, well,
energy.
and you can do stuff like just add. I think there's a couple. So in the first piece, In Time, you can hear my daughter. I think she's just like clicking some markers or something. But we just added like a ton of reverb to it. And it just like creates this like massive, amazing sound. Or just her whispering and then adding so much reverb. And yeah, so I like that. I think that's fun. Yeah,
Yeah,
it
that's
just adds
interesting.
another layer for sure.
So you also teach music, that's correct? Yeah. So I recently also started teaching music very
Oh,
recently.
cool.
So I'm just curious, What do you teach piano? Do you how do you do it? Are you working with a school
No,
or?
I teach privately just from my own studio. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. And what age range are you
Like,
teaching?
I teach all ages. Right now, I'm teaching most of my kids are pretty young. Like, I think my oldest is 9 and youngest is maybe 4 or 5. So, yeah.
Okay. So how do you approach, as I'm teaching about the same
Yeah.
age as well. How do you approach teaching kids? How the hell do you teach kids how to play music? Not
It's not
easy.
easy. No. It requires a lot of patience, which I have patience. And I don't know, there's something about I find working with kids, they just have no filter, or like they don't really care about, I don't know. I feel less pressure when I'm teaching kids, I think is what I'm trying to say. I don't feel pressure to be somebody like that I'm not, or I don't feel pressure to like perform, or yeah, I feel like their expectations are pretty low, which I think helps me because I don't do well under a lot of pressure. And I find sometimes teaching adults, it's way harder because they have more expectation at times, and I don't do well with kids, depending on their style of learning too, it can be easier or more difficult. So, like every kid has such a different and unique learning style, especially in music. So, and trying to tailor it to their needs is sometimes can be really tricky, but it also, yeah, it has a lot to do with even them finding the right teacher for their learning style. So, yeah.
Yeah, it blows me away how sponge-like
They
kids
are
are.
so, yeah, they just ingest everything so quickly. Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing. And they learn so fast, like, so fast if they practice.
That's a hard thing to do, is to just be like, well, do this at home. And that's all you get to say. Like, you can't push it any
You
further than
really
that.
can't. No.
Like,
No, there's nothing you can really do other than encourage them to just keep going. But yeah, there was something else I was going to add to that, but I lost it.
it's so strange that as we become adults, that we lose that like open-mindedness. And I know that there's like science behind it also, I'm sure, but
Totally.
but even without the sort of science, the fact that by learning in that receptive stage, and what you end up learning actually closes you off to new ideas. It's very
Totally.
difficult to stay receptive to new ideas.
For sure. Yeah. And that's why it's so hard for adults to start learning when they're adults. I think, like, for someone as an adult to start piano lessons who's had no musical background whatsoever, I think is it's much harder for them to learn it and learn it well and be able to remember it and get that muscle memory.
Imagine, I don't know if you know anything about it, I couldn't imagine learning computer programming, like starting tomorrow, you know? Did I cut out? Seems like it cut out. I don't know why it's doing
No.
this. No one else is on the
A
internet.
little bit. Did you? Yeah. Could be me.
I think it's me that did this yesterday.
I don't think it's me. Okay.
Okay. I just closed more applications. Let's close more. What was I saying? Yeah, I couldn't imagine learning computer programming at this age, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know anything about it. If I started tomorrow, I wouldn't even know where to start. And the same thing could be said about music.
Exactly. But you know what? It isn't impossible. It is adult to learn how to play the piano. They just won't learn it as quickly.
And it takes a lot more drive, I think. I think
Totally.
kids would like multitask
Commitment.
better.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I think I was Yeah, I was going to say for me as a teacher, I was just talking to a friend about this the other day because we were talking, she's taking voice lessons as an adult. And we were just talking about how certain things that come really naturally to us are harder to teach. So I find for me, like I have a really good ear. I can hear things and pick them up and just play them. Or rhythm too comes like, I love rhythm and I've always been strong in that area of music. So I find when I have a student come to me who has a hard time hearing rhythm or being able to pick up melodies or yeah, like ear training and stuff, I have a harder time understanding where they're coming from. Like I have to work harder to be able to connect with them and help them figure out how they're going to learn those things. So that's been tricky for me with teaching is having kids who don't necessarily like every kid is gifted so differently. And so one kid could be really great at rhythm, another kid maybe not as good at rhythm but has a really good ear. And like so you just have to kind of learn how to like work with those things even though they might be a little bit harder to teach because they come naturally to you. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah.
I've struggled with the same thing, although I've never thought about it so directly. In that, my weakness is in sight reading and theory, and that
Yes.
seems easier to
Yeah.
teach for me than the like I'm good at improvising and
Right.
my practicing my scales and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's actually quite hard to teach. It's hard to get kids comfortable improvising.
Totally. Yeah.
And also, I'm just like, you just do it.
Well, that's
I
because,
don't know how
right,
to
there
tell
for
somebody how
you,
to
yeah,
improvise.
for you, there's no method. Like, I felt the same way. Like, I had to teach myself how to improvise as a kid, and I like knew I was good at it, and I had no method. I just did it. Like, I don't even know how I taught myself how to do it. And so now when kids come to me and are like, I want to learn how to improvise, I'm just like, ah, I don't know. I don't really know what I'm doing.
I guess just, yeah, practice your scales. That's the only piece of advice
Yep,
I can give.
scales and yep, chords and triads, all those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me what's how did you get started with music? I tried to do some digging and I couldn't find anything. So did that cut out
Yeah,
again?
you did.
God damn. Some days this thing works and some days it doesn't. Like there could be four people in my house all doing classes on Zoom and it works fine. And then today nobody's home except me. And it's doing this. It doesn't make any sense.
Oh.
So yeah, tell me how you got started with music. I tried to do some digging. I couldn't find much
Oh
about
yeah.
your sort of origin story.
Yeah, I think I started piano, like playing piano when I was 5, just doing lessons. And then like I was trained classically, so my background is in classical music. And then as a teenager, I was a really like angsty teenager. I hated high school. I found music was like my only outlet. It was the only thing that really got me through high school. Like anyways. But then when I was in high school, I started really like exploring other music outside of like classical music. And I loved rock and roll. Rock and roll, like an alternative rock through high school, that like I just loved it so much. And then I remember when every time my mom would go out somewhere, I would just sit at my piano, I would like turn on the stereo as loud as I could. And just learn to play all my favorite rock songs basically on the piano. And that was sort of how I started learning how to improvise. That was like, those were my first steps. And then, and I played in church too growing up. Like, I was always like the church organist in my parents' church and stuff. And I did that as a job for years. And then after high school, I decided I wanted to go to Bible college and become like a worship leader in a church. And so that was my goal for a really long time. And so I took music out in Saskatchewan at Briarcrest College, and I got a music degree there in worship music. So, and through that degree, like I learned a lot more about like playing in a band and working in like more of a band setting and songwriting and a bit of jazz theory. So that was good for me. But then ultimately I realized after that, I don't really want to work in a church. That's not my jam. I love rock and roll. So I just
Yeah.
joined, well, I started. When we were like in our early 20s. And I found like post rock music. I discovered post rock music like probably at the end of high school. Sigur Rós, they like were my
Right.
favorite
Yeah.
band ever of all time. They still are. I love Sigur Rós.
Yeah, they're
All,
amazing
yeah,
band, truly.
all
Yeah.
their like really old, like their first few albums. Oh, I still listen to them all the time. And
Yeah.
so yeah, we started a post rock band, which was heavily influenced by like all like Explosions in the Sky and Mogwai and all those sweet post rock bands that we
Yeah.
love. And so that lasted for a few years. And all the while, I was always sort of writing my own music, but never. It was funny when I was listening to that interview with Kat Torin, and she said, "You guys were talking about the ego." And she was saying about how somebody told her the ego is just all the negative thoughts that come into your mind about yourself. And you can choose, like, you have to choose whether or not you're going to believe those things. So, all through my 20s, I really struggled with my ego. Like, I was writing my own music, but I was never confident enough in myself to actually do anything with it. I just sort of left it. I thought, I'm not, this isn't good enough. I'll never be good enough. I'll never be a composer. I'm just not, I don't have the education. I don't have the skill set, blah, blah, blah. So I would just always like hide behind other people. I always felt like I'll just like sort of be in the background. I'll be writing this music, but I'll just stay kind of like on the edge. I don't really want to commit too much because I don't want to fail. That was kind of my mindset. So I just played in these bands. I just recently quit a band called, they're called Young Neighbors. And we've been together for I started the band with my neighbor Eric next door. He's
Okay.
also the filmmaker that I work with.
Okay, cool.
So he's my neighbor, and we started this band, oh, like 8 years ago. And so we've been like recording a few albums and playing a few shows here and there. And that was fun. But you know, like last year, I just realized, what am I doing? I've been writing all this music. I released an album like 6 years ago and did nothing with it because I was so scared. And I just need to commit to this. Like, this is what I want to be doing. I need to stop making excuses and just do it because I love it. So that's what I did with this album. I was like, I got to commit to this album. It's just going to be, this is what I'm going to be doing. This is what I want to do. I'm going to pursue this. And yeah, so I've just kind of, here I am.
Well, from what you just said, too, the record sounds like something you would want to hear. That come through? That didn't come through, did it?
Sorry, I lost you a little bit there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
The
no.
new record sounds, from what you just told me, the new record sounds like you made something that you would want to listen to.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And to get to that
Yes.
place is very difficult. It takes a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, once you do it, because you. I assume Sarah Houston is your real name.
Yeah, it is my real
Yeah.
name. Yeah.
It's like, because you can only do that once. You can only put your real name associated with a project once for the first one, you know? And then you suddenly have a canon of music now that you have to
Yes.
adhere or live to. But with that, I think there's a sense of like, oh, well, this wasn't, I like failing didn't mean anything if you feel
Yeah.
like you felt or failed or
Yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's very cool. Post rock, eh?
I
That
love
makes
post rock.
a lot of sense from the record. I wouldn't have thought that. I assumed like I was thinking like Max Richter,
Oh, yeah, him too. Yeah, I have a lot of different influences. Like, yeah, Max Richter would be a big one. Olafur Arnold is a huge
Yeah,
influence.
his music is very beautiful.
It's so
Sometimes a bit
beautiful.
over the top for my kind of taste of ambient music,
Yeah.
but yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of, there's a Polish composer, Hania Rani, who I've just
Okay, no.
fallen in love with. She,
Very good.
yeah, she's just kind of starting to, I think, kind of make it big, but she's an amazing pianist. Amazing. So, yeah, you should check her out if you're interested
I certainly am.
in that style of
Was
music.
Hania Rani? Is that right?
Yeah,
Okay.
Hania Rani. Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, so yeah, everything from like and I still love like alternative indie rock, anything really with a story. Like I don't know if you know David Bazan. I love David Bazan.
No, I
Like
don't know.
Pedro the Lion. Maybe that's what, maybe
Okay, I
it's
do know Pedro the Lion.
yeah, he so he would
Yeah.
be the he's the lead singer of Pedro the Lion.
Okay.
So
Yeah, I think I saw
anyways.
them play once, Pedro the Lion.
Oh really?
Yeah,
Yeah,
I
they're
think it was
still
at
around.
Sasquatch in my
Oh
early
yeah.
youth. Yeah.
Yeah, we saw David Bazan play in Edmonton at a he does he used to do these like I don't know if he still does them, but he does like house shows where he'll just go around and play in different people's houses and he'll just tour North America doing this. Anyways, so we went to see him in Edmonton and it was just like the most personal into like I've never been to a show where I felt like, oh, like this actually feels like church. Like this is what it's supposed to be. Like it was amazing. Yeah. So he's got a such an a, such anyway.
Sorry, you cut out for just a sec there.
Oh, sorry. I just said that
It
he
is what
just
it
has a
is.
really interesting story.
Yeah. Do you think church music? I was thinking about that for a sec there. A lot of people I've talked to seem to, that seems to be where it all
Yeah.
starts. They don't necessarily keep their religion, but I think it really is such a great foundation for becoming comfortable with
Totally.
performance and the music of that of the world of, I got, what do you call it? Worship
Yeah.
music? Is
Yeah,
that
I guess
the
that's it. Yeah.
right?
Worship. Yeah.
Everything is there. Like there's a whole foundation of music in that you learn harmony,
Yeah.
melody, chords,
Yeah.
rhythm, arrangements for vocals and various other instruments. It's not the most percussive music, I guess, but although it
It
can
can
be, I guess
be.
you look at like gospel music and stuff, that's very percussive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't
Yeah,
know. I don't really know where I was
that
getting
was a
at.
big fa like that was a foundational thing for me as an artist. And I still play in church once in a while. But yeah, I've pulled back from that a little bit from that world. But I still hold pretty tight to my own faith, but no.
Worry about that.
Yeah, but church is, yeah, it is really for music, it can be a really foundational learning base. Yeah, for sure.
Think too, it teaches these kind of magical melodies that you can
Yeah.
hear in your records, that are these like sneaky, beautiful, that you don't
Yeah.
really hear that as much in like rock and alternative. I think that it's more about spontaneous energy rather than. And there's still spontaneity, that being said, in sort of more beauty focused music, I guess. That's is
Yeah.
but these kind of more wandering melodies rather than like a blast of youthful energy or whatever. I don't know.
I can see that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I definitely don't. I mean, there is a lot of music out there, a lot of church music out there that I just like, the what is this? This is ugh. But yeah, I find I cling really tightly to like the older. I love like old, really old hymns and because they were such a part of my childhood, I think. And so I feel like I connect with that. there today.
I've always liked the mass numbers, the big mass hymns, like
Yeah, the choral works.
like Bach's Mass in B minor is one of my favorite pieces. It's like it's just such ludicrously complex music all at once too. It's not like progressive rock where it's like, oh, what do you do with the guitar? It's it's very present.
It's very, for sure. And it's every part matters. Like every part contributes to the whole, which is so beautiful. I love that about that music. Cool.
I think that's all I got. I wanted to say also I really like your Spotify playlist that you got there, the
Oh,
Orientals for
thanks.
Piano. Yeah, I sat and listened to that last night. And it
Thank
was,
you.
great way to wind down.
Yeah, I just Spotify is kind of a whole new world for me. Like I've just sort of recently kind of been discovering what you can do with Spotify to kind of grow your music and your audience, and it's a crazy world out there of music streaming,
Yeah,
really.
it's simultaneously super convenient and super disheartening.
For sure. So many mixed feelings about it, but
There's too much data available now when you release something. It's like I have X amount of monthly listens, this person has X amount of monthly listens, and like
it's so hard not to play the comparison game, and also like you just get so glued to those numbers. Like it's so easy to just get sucked into it, which is not a good thing, I don't
It's
think.
not a good thing, no.
No.
Because ultimately, who cares?
Who cares?
Although,
Totally.
I guess you do want to like facilitate doing it for a living. So that's the part where you care. But the thing is, like, you need to be doing crazy numbers on streaming services to make any money.
It's like impossible, like for me as an artist right now, to make like I make pennies from Spotify. It's But still, you still look at those numbers.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And it's nice to know that people are listening, even if it's just a few, though.
That is true. And that's how people listen now. So, like, it's just what it is.
And I always think about my own listening too, is that I'm more likely to click on something inside of a nice machine like Spotify or YouTube than I am to honestly click on a Bandcamp link if I
Totally.
come across something.
Yeah, it's just so convenient. Which is and I know I hear you. It's sad in a way. Like it's just changed so much. CDs are like like even consider, 'cause I just released this album digitally. Like I didn't press CDs or vinyls or anything. And for me to do that, like I mean it right now it's not really feasible. Like nobody buys CDs anymore, at least not people who are listening to my music. So
And it's a huge financial commitment.
it's
Like,
huge.
CD's easier than vinyl for sure, but you
It
can also
is.
charge more for a vinyl.
You
So,
can. And vinyl, there's something about vinyl that is just like it's almost like a piece of art. Like having a vinyl is like, okay, I got this vinyl. Like I enjoy collecting vinyls, but not everybody does. So.
I always think too, like the size of the record shows its importance. It's like more
Yes.
value. The music is more valuable because it's bigger. Just,
Yeah.
it's easy for you to wrap your head around that.
Yeah.
Whereas on Spotify, it's like the least valuable. That's the thing that really breaks my heart about it it's much harder to have like a magical moment with something when you find it inside this super busy, super cure like curated to advantage whatever's trendy. The satisfaction of finding something amazing and listening to it just isn't the same. It doesn't force your hand as much either when you're like, oh, this looks interesting. You can really be kind of attention deficit about it.
You mean with like streaming?
Yeah, with streaming,
For sure. And I find too, it's like, does anyone even listen to a full album anymore? Like on Spotify, like people are just making playlists. And like when I listen to a playlist, I hear one song and then I save it and I don't even bother to go find the artists half the time to listen to all their music. Like, I think we've just become so almost like lazy because, but then it's like, I still want artists to make out, like, I still want to make a full album as an artist. Like, that's important to me. And I want people to listen to the full album, but it's just not the same as it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's yeah, I like why do people even make albums in the streaming era, you know? Like
Yeah.
why are we so attracted to the body of work? I don't know.
Yeah. I think for me, like for this album, for me, it was important because I wanted it was really like a concept album. And I did consider like releasing each piece kind of like as a single, 'cause that's what people are doing. And it seems like if you do that, because then you can submit to Spotify playlists each time
Yeah.
you submit your single. But then I was like, no, I can't do that with this album. Song as a single, it's just gonna lose like the whole, it won't be nearly as connected as if I release it all together. And I think that's a big, that's probably, I'm sure other artists feel that way as well about their own music. Like, but I do know some artists who do release every single song as a single, like, and that's just what they've chosen to do with their music now because it's way more effective on streaming sites.
Yeah.
It's just kind of what your preference is, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's I think it is cooler though. It's like to put out like an album because it's I don't know, it's like a single just feels like a YouTube video, and an album feels like sitting in a movie theater and
Yeah.
watching a movie, no cell
Yeah.
phones allowed, you know?
Yeah. You can just enjoy it.
Yeah. As a
Yeah.
whole, like yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
'Cause yeah, with the music I really like too, the with ambient music and stuff, I think the streaming has really screwed with it because it's such slow, patient music, and then it being all kind of put into this bracket of study music and sleep music and these big playlists is like I don't think this is at all by design to be put inside these things, like
Right.
sort of doing a disservice to somebody's full artistic creative statement.
Yeah, for sure. I think too, like things are just going to keep changing. Like 10 years down the road, it's going to look totally different than it looks even
That's true.
right now with who knows. So, like when I was when I was in my 20s listening to music, everyone was like downloading stuff illegally from like Napster or like
Napster,
all those. So, and to think how much it's changed since then is just in, like it's incredible.
yeah. Yeah, 'cause
Yeah.
I'm nostalgic for having like a digital library that was things that I illegally downloaded, you know,
Yeah.
and organizing that, these like very poorly named files, and being like, okay, iTunes, fix it all up. It's the closest thing I've ever
Oh,
had to
yeah.
a music collection, and I don't, I can't do that anymore. It's just that I don't want to have the time for that, you know,
No.
and that it doesn't even sound that time consuming, right?
It doesn't, but it was very time consuming
Yeah, it
when you think
was.
about it. I remember doing that too, organizing everything into, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It was so important at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, it's just become, music streaming has just become so convenient. But even selling an album on Bandcamp is like, if you release an album digitally and you put it on Bandcamp, people are, I feel like people are way more, they're not willing to go and listen to it on their favorite streaming app. Like, and to me, I get it. Like, I get why people don't buy albums on Bandcamp because, like, it doesn't mean as much anymore to have an album in your music library. Like, like, people are
No.
just like, why would I put it in my music library when I can just go and listen to it anytime I want?
On demand, yeah.
On demand, why would I want to own it? But yeah, it's just
Yeah,
such an
I've always
interesting.
wondered that about Bandcamp, like, 'cause I buy music on Bandcamp, but that's just 'cause
Cool.
it's a radio show. I have a radio show. I should buy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like,
yeah.
it's like who like these little tiles. I always wonder like who is buying this stuff. I guess some artists only exist on Bandcamp, and that's
I think some do. Yeah.
Good way to do it, but
yeah.
It's also a good way to limit your audience, I guess. But
yeah.
I guess it's sure. Kind of a catch-22.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like there's enough people out there supporting enough people in a more financially viable, what's the word, like patronage kind of way.
Yeah.
And I think that we're steering in that direction. That gives me hope for mm-hmm. the financial stability of being creative.
Being an artist.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. But then there's still the advent of you have to be on someone else's platform to promote it.
Yeah.
You can't, it's impossible to be completely like independent and not like label wise, but just independent, truly.
Right. Right.
Because you, even though someone else is promoting it, you're still doing all your own administrative work probably and so on and so forth. I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, I could go on and on about this. I like this conversation. It's just so relevant to where we're at right now.
Yeah. But yeah. I don't know, like, everything will change and we won't even notice it. You know?
No. Yeah. We'll probably just keep on changing with, hopefully. I always like to think of myself as somebody who is just willing to change with the times. Hopefully that will just continue happening. We'll see. Yeah. I don't like to become too stubborn about where my music ends up, but
yeah.
Yeah.
You want to be like a kid, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That was a good conversation. I love the album. I truly do. I think it's
thank you so
gorgeous.
Much. Thanks.
Thanks
for having me on your show.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
It was great to meet
My
you.
My pleasure. You too.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stop.